So a gentleman walked in our offices a couple weeks ago. His name is Bruce Yelly, and he started a 501c3 for End Choices, and it's something that he is very passionate about, and Bruce is joining me here today. And Bruce, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Tell me a little bit about the journey to this nonprofit. What was preemptive, or what came before this to make you want to look at this?
Good question. When I was young, I watched a mother's friend go through months or years of cancer treatments and being sick. And she loved living and wanted to do it. But I was thinking, boy, that's not my quality of life that I would like. And I don't know, it seemed like God put in my heart that, you know, something needs to be done about this. And you start reading about Dr. Kevorkian and Derek Humphreys. And I started thinking, wow, someone is doing something about this. So naturally, I was more interested and always kept it in my mind and contributed to the groups that were doing it and so on. And then I got Parkinson's, and I have a couple other diseases. So we moved from California to Oregon to possibly take advantage of the law when the time comes. And then I realized that Parkinson's, you're going to have probably dementia is a real good choice. Plus, I had other concussions from football injuries. So I was looking at probably a pretty unpleasant death for lots of years. And then I looked at the law and I said, well, I'm not going to qualify because no doctor is going to give me only 6 months to live. Plus, at that point in time, I may not be mentally capable to ask them. Mm-hmm. So I decided this law needs to be made more compassionate, and started writing letters. Actually, I wrote a letter to the editor at Eugene Register Guard. It was printed, and a senior journalism crew picked up the story and was assigned by Oregon Public Broadcasting to do stories on interesting people of the Pacific Northwest. So they thought, wow, this guy's different. Gave me a call, and they came out and spent a couple days with me. And the video is on Vimeo.com, and you can enter my name and you'll see it. And that kind of gave me an incentive to maybe see what's up, and started talking with people. And all I got was support. Thank you. You should do this support. So I wrote up a little paragraph and went to Senator Arne Roblin with it. And we talked for a while, and he agreed in 2019 to sponsor an expansion to the Oregon Death with Dignity penalty. So I, in the meantime, sold my Babe Ruth autograph and have used those funds to travel around Oregon and find people as compassionate and passionate as I am about it. And I'm teaching them how to educate on senior advocacy and end-of-life education about what we have now and what it's going to be. Right now, a month ago, I testified at the Senate for the Senate bill, House Bill 3145, which was changing our 25-year-old advance directive. It was interesting to me that the people that opposed it were people that were supposed to be compassionate, and they were talking about the mentally incapable's rights, that if they weren't capable, you were taking their rights away. And mine is, no, you took their rights away because they were incapable. Because when I had my rights and my right mind, I told you what I wanted to live past.
Right.
Okay, well, just because I don't have my right mind doesn't mean I changed it. Hmm. So, you know, basically the opposing people are what I'm finding seem to be the people that make money keeping people alive.
What's interesting is that if you write up a will and you state specific things in your will, and I am of sound mind and of body, you know, and then you go into a, say, a dementia state or something like that, your last wishes are taken into account there, but it's different when you're talking about end-of-life procedures.
Exactly. The gentleman that testified in front of me, Bill Harris, he moved up here with his wife for the same reason, to take advantage of the law, and they had an advance directive that she did not to want to, it's called VSED, verifiably stop eating and drinking, or voluntarily stop eating and drinking. And she started losing her mind. She was in a healthcare facility who wouldn't honor her advance directive of being able to do that because she couldn't voice it to them. She was, her mental capability was gone. Her husband was the executor of the advanced directive.
They wouldn't listen.
They wouldn't listen. They were spoon feeding her. She couldn't feed herself, so they were spoon feeding her. He went to court. He lost. His main opposition was the well-funded national organization that I'm talking about. This seems to be fighting Oregon. There was a story 2-3 weeks ago in the Washington Post about Bill and I and Oregon's Death with Dignity law. And the people that are fighting Oregon's Death with Dignity law are the people that are trying to pass Oregon's restrictive law in all the other states. So to us, it's like, why aren't you helping us make a more compassionate law rather than be passing that restrictive law with everybody? They haven't answered us. They just say that they think that, like I said, it takes the rights away from the demented. And I don't understand it.
When you first started off, you mentioned Dr. Kevorkian, which when he first came on the scene, you know, he was kind of a lot of people looked down on him and saying, you know, this guy's nuts. He's, you know, he's just killing people. He's using this opportunity to take life and stuff like that. And yet now, you know, Oregon does have a death with dignity law many years later. And kind of the opinion, the attitude with a lot of folks has changed about that. But yet it seems like we're still at a place where, you know, hey, let's keep you alive as long as possible, even if you're in the worst possible health conditions.
In 100 years, they're going to say that the biggest form of torture ever was in these days, keeping people alive. And it's just pharmacy, big health industry. I hate to say it, but memory care units, that's how they make their money, was keeping people alive. To me, someone really religious, which I kind of am, they say, well, you know, it's up to God. And to me, I'm saying, well, when I had my heart attack, maybe that was God's way of telling me, it's your day. But then a man came in and played God and brought me back to life. You know, how do we know what was God's will there?
Right. And many would say that, well, the fact that the man was there was God's will to bring you back. And then there's other would say, like you say, you know, maybe it was your day.
Maybe it's a bad spirit coming back. God told me to do this, you know. And actually, if you go, I can debate almost anybody. I've been through a lot of religious training, research. You know, and I know that God's not going to forsake me once I take him into my heart. So I'm not going to hell if I commit suicide for sure, because he just told me that.
Some say that's the unforgivable sin, you know, some use, you know, certain Bible verses to say, well, you know, that's the point where it's like, well, no, sorry, then you must not have had him in your heart if you were willing to do that. No, I don't know that I agree with that. I'm just saying.
To me, because I've done Catholics, I've been with the Holy Rollers and some tuition, everything else. So, let me get my thoughts here. The Parkinson's coming in.
Yeah. Take your time.
You may have to refresh what you said.
Which part?
The last question you said.
Well, I was just talking about how some people say that taking your own life is the unforgivable sin.
Right. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that.
Right. You're right. It doesn't.
To me, the Bible, there's only one original Bible. There's only one Bible written by the hand of God. And that's the Ten Commandments. All the rest are someone else's interpretation of what they think God said. Okay, the Old Testament was written first by people that think that's what God meant. When God wrote Ten Commandments, it were pretty clear. Okay, so then as time progressed, progression changes, things get better, and all of a sudden we have the New Testament. Well, I'm kind of waiting for the next testament, because to me, they didn't think of keeping people alive back in those days. They had no concept. You were 20, you were sick, you're dead. You were 30, you were sick, you're dead. They didn't stick you on artificial respiration to keep you alive. So that's not even something God or anybody would have thought about addressing back then. Mm-hmm. So definitely causing suffering because of of medical conditions and keeping them alive wouldn't have been addressed back then. And it right. wouldn't be addressed in the New Testament. Well, it will be in the next Testament.
Right.
To me, they're just opinions of what everybody thinks God said. God did say one thing. He says, do not commit murder. Suicide is not murder. Murder is against someone else. Mm-hmm. Definition. So nowhere in the Bible does it say it is a sin to commit murder. Samson committed suicide.
Technically, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of them did. King, whatever, fell on his sword so he wouldn't have to be tortured.
Yeah.
You know, it's there. It's just people are going past it and going, oh, here's what we think because this is what we were told.
So in the medical community, and of course, you know, doctors and nurses are all there, you know, I think mainly for the betterment of you. And I think medicine started out to be, well, let's keep you healthy long enough so we can find what's wrong and fix it. And then somewhere along the line, it became, well, let's just keep you alive mm-hmm. long enough. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's that way with everything. I'm just saying that seems to be the overall, you know, not the individual doctor or nurse, but the mm-hmm. overall thought in, and maybe it's because of Big Pharma or one of those things. Well, it's like, you know.
Money talks yeah. everywhere. But there are the Doctors Association's Association has just become neutral on it. People are realizing that this is going to have to done. Common sense, it, not just compassion or religion. Religion, to me, morality says you should do it, and religion says you should do it. Okay, God told me to bring this message out. So there's the religion part. Compassion takes care of itself when you watch someone suffer. You, most of us have already seen or witnessed someone suffering.
Oh, I watched my mother go through it. You know,
Most of us have.
Yeah, and it was excruciating. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, to see that and knowing that she's not getting any better.
No. So the medical association is coming around. I had a doctor from OSHU call me the other day, and he writes up to 24 prescriptions a year. Says he probably writes more than anybody. Ask what he can do to help us. I've had other doctors support us. So, you know, I'm getting a list together of names that are for it. Very few people have been against it. The only ones are that people that have the deep-seated faith. And like I said, to me, faith, dignity, and morality are opinions. Where is yours? Hmm. So, you know, forcing your opinion on someone else is not right.
What are some of the changes you would like to see to the death to dignity law?
First of all, the main change was take out that 6-month designation that two doctors tell you only have 6 months to live, because very few doctors are going to do that until you're dying and then it's a foregone conclusion. So what difference does it make that 6 months and not suffering? So we want to take that out. And where it says 6 months, we want to put in upon diagnosis of an incurable and or untreatable disease causing unbearable physical and or mental pain is going to be your line. And as far as the mental capabilities, when I write my advanced directive, that's my line. That's not going to change.
That's your line in the sand. This is what needs to happen for me. And don't you try to go against it.
Exactly. And you know, it's funny, that's what my neurologist calls it. I draw my line in the sand, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And then after that, we want to put protections. We want to get protections against the caregiver, against the for the caregiver and for the doctor to be able to not be prosecuted for
impunity.
For helping with this, okay? We want protections against the patient from coercion or people messing with their prescriptions. So we want to put a couple of laws on that. And we also want it to make legal for a person to ask for doctor assisted, which they don't have now. Doctor cannot assist. So those are the things we're looking for. We think that, you know, compassion and common sense and all those are right in there. And that's what this law needs to cover all of us that are suffering or going to suffer. And the baby boomers, Alzheimer's Association, and this is just Alzheimer's, this isn't cancer or neurology or any of that. Alzheimer's Association says by 2025, 21% of us are going to have Alzheimer's. Last year, there was over almost $700 billion spent taking care of home care people. Common sense says us baby boomers are going to overwhelm that system that is already overwhelmed. So to me, it's a no-brainer. I see this coming everywhere in the future just because of people, so many people getting sick and so many people in the world and the overpopulation. Right?
Hmm. Of course, we don't want to use it for population control.
Not at all. You know, no, but some of that may not be that far-fetched. I mean, right. It already is in some of these countries.
Right.
You know, that is the form of population control. We're just a really, you know, advanced country and hopefully don't get there. But
well, and there's a lot of countries that don't have the medical advantages that we have here, that the people do die younger. They do not make it through, you know, the diseases that they are affected with, which aren't necessarily cancer and Alzheimer's and things like that.
No.
You know, you look at America, we've got the larger population of those kind of diseases, and you think, well, gee, we're supposed to be the most advanced country, and yet through our diet or lifestyle or contaminants or whatever, we have
the sickest.
We have made ourselves sicker.
And we are the most expensive to treat, and yet we're the ones that are coming up with most of the
cures
or the treatments.
Yeah.
Interesting, in the biggest profit margin by a section of business is in the medical research. If you look it up, say, who makes the biggest profit? Medical research is going to be it. And yet the medical companies tell you, it's so expensive to do our research and development.
Yeah.
And yet that's where all their money's made, from grants from the government.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting topic, and one that I certainly have not made my mind up about, but yet I've seen enough suffering from people to question, you know, question what my plan will be, you know, down the road.
I think that's the thing, is most people don't want to talk about death, don't want to think about death.
Well, we're all headed there.
Yeah, we're all, it's some, we're all going to hit.
Yeah, we're all going to get there. None of us are going to get out of here alive.
And like I said, Alzheimer's says 21% of us by 2025 are going to have Alzheimer's.
And I'm no statistician, but I tend to think that's kind of low. Yeah, you know, I tend to think that's kind of a low number, considering everything that leads to Alzheimer's.
But that doesn't include your other forms of dementia.
Right.
Right.
That's just one of the forms
of dementia. So, yeah, you're right. 21% is, and even if they bump that up, you add the other 5-10% in there, you know. Mm-hmm. Plus, then you look at your cancers, your autoimmune diseases,
which are rampant now.
Rampant.
Yeah.
So, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know? We don't have the money to care for them, and I just think, like I said, it's a no-brainer that those that don't want to live with those kind of conditions shouldn't be made to.
Well, Bruce, tell folks how they can get. I'm obviously, you're probably going to get some positive and negative feedback from this, and you know, you obviously prepared for that. But if there's a way that people wanted to either support you or ask you more questions or find out more about this, where can they go? What can they do? Who can they talk to?
Okay, you can go to endchoices.com and look at our website, and that will direct you to all of our get a hold of me information. We're also on Facebook. You'll also be, if you pay attention to the local newspaper, they will be doing press releases when I do have roundtable discussions. I've been with the senior center and the library talking about having group discussions on this and education systems for our citizens. A month and a half ago, they did do the senior council put on a death and dying round circle at the library. And I think there were probably 30 to 40 of us there. And I brought out what I was doing and just got so much support. And so pay attention to the newspaper. I will be holding more meetings to educate people.
Certainly let us know too, because we can get that information.
Yeah, and I would love to get volunteers to passionate ones to do what I'm doing. Basically, that's what
help
I'm doing.
Get the info out.
Is traveling around, just trying to get the info out, and finding people that are going to help get the info out. I've gotten lots of support from the senior centers and the senior homes, the active living senior homes. Even the assisted living is pretty much. Memory care I haven't been into yet, but I have a feeling that they aren't going to fight it, because even though they make money there, they know there's going to be so many of us that it's just going to be a foregone conclusion. The amount of people that want to live in those conditions is going to keep them in business. I talk to people that say, I want to live to my last breath. I don't care how many tubes are in me.
Yeah, there's going to be those.
There you go. You know,
that's your choice, right?
It's your choice. Yeah. That's all we're asking for, is a choice at the end of your life to suffer or not.
Well, I'm sure that that after folks hear this, we'll probably have somebody from the other side next month to discuss this. And it's good. It's a good discussion to have. And I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much.
I would love the newspaper and you guys to set up a debate if we get some.
Yeah, we could easily do that.
I would love it.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for being here. Bruce Yelley, and he is the senior and end-of-life educator. And you can go to endchoices.com for more information on that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Coming up next on Our Town, we'll talk with a group of folks who say you can have political conversations without getting overheated, opening a new business called The Patriot Place. Coming up next on Our Town.